This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Way on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We're taking you around the globe, one country at a time. It's a full house here tonight. We've got Paul.
Hello.
G'day, Damien.
Hi.
Welcome, Dean.
G'day, Matt.
And my name is Matt. Some people are 100% gay. Some people 100% straight. And then there's this whole other group with a more fluid sexuality in between. But there is also another group, straight men who have sexual encounters with other straight men, and they are far from gay.
What is the role of groups such as fraternities or the military in fostering this behaviour?
How do straight men rationalise these acts of gay sex?
Could these acts actually be seen as strengthening heterosexuality of their participants? To explain gay acts by straight men, tonight we speak with Jane Ward, author of Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men. Here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
It's understood to be a masculinity test. So paradoxically, you're submitting to this homosexual act as a way of showing how heteromasculine you are, that you can endure this anal penetration and stand up unbroken, not a fag. Everybody is clear that these are not sincere acts of gay sex. These are sort of homophobic endurance tests.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
And to start off with, we've got some good news. Over in the US, Oak Park High School 2015 homecoming has broken stereotypes and made history. The senior class has nominated their first transgender student as homecoming queen, and it was announced on Saturday that she won the title.
Now, if you haven't seen, any American teenage-type movie for the past 20 or 30 years, homecoming queen and homecoming king are like the bells of the ball. It's the end of school graduation event, but they're the ones who are up the front and dressed all prurity.
So if you've seen Carrie, or I think Pretty in Pink had some homecoming themes as well, yeah, it's a big deal.
The Lyndon Patterson, who came out as a female transgender, has been dreaming about this since her freshman's year, but she never thought it'd be possible. So he'd broken some barriers and is excited and hoping that others will be following in her footsteps.
And probably a big part of this, or one reason that makes this even bigger news, is Oak Park High School is in Missouri, which is, you know, part of that big middle bit. It's a flyover state.
Flyover country, that's all. Or if you're a conservative, the heartland.
The heartland. Yeah, we'll call it flyover. So it's probably a place you wouldn't expect to be leading the way in transgender issues, I wouldn't have thought.
And Paul, tell us, how did her students respond to her becoming homecoming queen?
Well, they're the ones who actually voted for her to win the title. As I said, she didn't actually expect it. She just wanted to raise more attention to putting her name forward. But what I love about it is that her mother rode alongside her in the parade.
Oh, I like that.
When she was asked why she did it, well, because it was her child. What else would she do?
She saw no other option than to support and to love her daughter. Congratulations to Oak Park High.
Over to Northern Ireland. Now, tell me, what country does this remind you of? You ready?
Ready.
No prizes for guessing. A number of leading LGBT groups in Northern Ireland have rejected Labour's calls for a referendum on same-sex marriage.
Right, referendum, right.
Yeah. I'm seeing double.
Now, of course, Northern Ireland is the only place within the United Kingdom that currently still does not allow same-sex marriage.
Correct. Same-sex marriage has been passed by elected representatives in both the Westminster Parliament in England and Wales and by Holyrood in Scotland. Northern Ireland continues to lag on the issue.
So their assembly, the Stormont Assembly, their parliament, with the governing Democratic Unionist Party, is blocking an equal marriage bill. Four times it has been blocked by filling a petition of concern, which vetoes the bill.
They must be very concerned.
Such a tasteful word. Concern.
In a joint statement, a number of LGBT organisations, the Rainbow Project, Here and I, Cara, Friends, Sal and Gender Jam and I, said that the idea of putting equality to a public vote was fundamentally wrong and that their resources are better spent helping LGBT people than running an election campaign. So what do you think about that?
So these organisations are actually saying no to same-sex marriage?
No, they're saying no to a referendum. So like some other country we know, they're saying that this is a construct of law. The body that deals with changes to law is the Parliament.
Should just get on and do it.
And it should go through the Parliament. And, you know, it would be like Australia wasting 140 or 150 million running a plebiscite in order to do something that the Parliament should do.
While the Republic of Ireland needed to make constitutional changes to permit same-sex marriage, requiring a referendum, the groups say equality can be passed in Northern Ireland through normal legislation, as was the case in England, Wales and Scotland. So it's not the only way forward.
And it's not as if there isn't precedent for this as well. So
right
throughout the United Kingdom, you know, they are the ones that are standing out. I guess that's a bit of the story of Northern Ireland, though. I mean, they have been the black sheep of that family for many, many years. Maybe this is a part of it.
But they following, because Ireland did have a referendum and actually had a vote on it, Southern Ireland, the Republic
Southern Ireland,
of Ireland
yeah.
did. So are they following their local cousins?
Not as yet. But also the Republic of Ireland did have marriage in their constitution, which is why they had to go to a referendum. So whilst some people even here have espoused, you know, oh, it should be a referendum, well, marriage is not in our constitution. So we cannot change the Marriage Act via a referendum.
I believe, wasn't that brought in during the Howard period?
2004.
Yes. Thank
Emblazed
you.
Between
on
a man and a
brain.
Woman to the exclusion of all others, I believe, is the bit that's causing us grief.
Now we're off to our favourite character in Russia.
Oh, what's that sound?
I think that's the Vitaly music.
It is, I believe it is. Yes, it is.
He is a regular visitor to our show.
It is. We're off in Russia at the moment. Now, regular listeners will know that we have a bit of a soft spot for this dill, Vitaly Milanov.
So,
I think we've got other words for describing where we'd like to put him.
Yes, that's true. So, anyway, he's the architect of Russia's law banning gay propaganda to protect minors from propaganda. Gay propaganda. So, he's a member of the Legislative Assembly of St. Petersburg, for Putin's United Russia Party, and he's one of the country's most high-profile homophobes, and he's been waging a moral crusade against LGBTI rights, and was, of course, the architect of the Propaganda of Non-Traditional Sexual Relationships Law, which was signed into law in 2013. This has been one debacle after another.
Really, all you have to do is say the word gay there, and he will spring up and espouse something negative and homophobic.
You just need to get a rainbow.
A rainbow, that's right.
He will be
you just
up
need
in
to
arms.
Look gay and you're in trouble.
Well, you know, he's attacked Nike for having a rainbow sort of colour scheme on some of their T-shirts.
That you can't even buy in Russia.
Yes, that's true. He's called for Russia to withdraw from Eurovision, branding it the Eurovision Sodom Show. In October, he said that Apple CEO Tim Cook should be banned from Russia after he spoke publicly about being gay for the first time. And in 2013, Classy Vitaly said that gay people were not normal and compared being gay to living with a dog, with a horse, with a sheep. Anyway, in sort of, I suppose, to reward him for his hard-earned efforts, he's been awarded one of the country's highest civilian honours, a second-class Order for Merit to the Fatherland.
It should have been a second-class order for a second-class citizen.
Well, it's been awarded... these grapes are sour. So, it is awarded for outstanding contributions to the state associated with the development of Russian statehood due to his work as a lawmaker. So, I suppose we can, you know, have some congratulations to Vitaly there.
Doesn't Fatherland sound rather gay, though?
It does a bit.
Now, not far down the road in Azerbaijan, some not good news. The European Parliament has taken the time to specifically condemn the intimidation and oppression of LGBTI people in Azerbaijan and called on its government to undertake human rights reforms. The resolution criticised their parliament over various issues of human rights abuses. They have reported on internet classifications, peaceful demonstrations that have been banned, and the government recently introduced higher fines and longer prison sentences if you attended a public assembly.
As now, our friend Ulrike Lunacek said, it is time that the government stops persecuting those with whom it should be cooperating to create a better and respectful country.
They have actually legalised homosexuality back in 2000, but there is still this ongoing oppression and intimidation of LGBTI people, many of them actually fleeing the country. Human rights activists fighting for equality say that there should neither be obstruction in their work and they will not be intimidated. So the law has been laid down by the LGBTI people, which due credit to them.
Moving on to some good news.
Over in Thailand, Thailand is a leading force in Asia and the rest of the world for LGBT rights. They've just enacted a wide-sweeping non-discrimination law, the 2015 Gender Equality Law, which was passed in March. And this excludes discrimination against people based on their gender identity or sexual orientation.
So this is pretty significant because the gender identity bit is something that very few countries have sort of even grasped, so Thailand's right at the forefront of this.
And anyone found against this act will be facing up to 6 months in prison or a fine of around $550, well, 20,000 baht.
Yeah, 20 sounds bigger in baht, doesn't it? Now, they are also doing some education groups, so they're holding some workshops to educate members of government, the law, and also the media on these changes to the law. And the public plays an important role in keeping a watchful eye on these cases of discrimination.
And in brief, in Indonesia, they have bowed to pressure from conservatives concerned about moral values and censored the country's leading LGBT online web presence.
In Malaysia, the tourism minister has publicly declared that the LGBT community will never get equal rights in that country, as they're incompatible to the Islamic teachings.
In Uganda, a former soccer team coach has been convicted of sodomy in a humiliating public trial.
And two gay policemen tied the knot last week in Spain in a world-first wedding.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is David Odari from the Ubuntu Foundation, Malawi, Southern Africa, on the World Wide Web on Joy 94.9.
We are tonight speaking with our guest from the US who's written a book called Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men. We'll be getting into that in a second. A message has come in from our Worldwide Wrap from Ray. Thanks, Ray. He's updating us on Thailand. Thailand might have newly progressive LGBTI laws, but they have one of the most atrocious animal rights records with live dog and cat meat trade. Also, apart from China, the highest rate of trading in poached endangered animals. I didn't know that. They do, however, have the highest rate of sex change operations in the world.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
Now, speaking tonight with our guests, we're talking a lot about sexuality and I guess the fluidity of sexuality and the idea that perhaps we don't all fit into a box, which kind of takes us back to the Kinsey scale. So if you haven't seen the movie, if you haven't heard about the Kinsey scale, this was Alfred Kinsey who did quite a significant study in the late 40s, which was pretty significant at that time. He basically groundbreaking, one might say. Went out and did a whole lot of interviews of college students in the US, and they were all very open about what they did and didn't do in their sexuality.
So we don't all fit into a box, but we all fit into a scale.
A scale, that's right. Well, so the base of the scale
is a continuum rather than
a continuum. I like that.
No, I believe it goes from one, then goes from 0 to 6.
Yeah.
That's not a continuum. That's a scale.
All right. You can be 3.5.
We've got the grammar police in the studio tonight. So the scale, if you're a zero, you are exclusively heterosexual. You have no experience or desire for sexual activity with the same sex. The other end of the scale, you're exclusively homosexual with no experience or desire for sexual activity with those of the opposite sex.
You can be outside the scale as well, where you have no contact and no interaction whatsoever.
Which in modern day terms we call being asexual. And then you've got all this grey spot in the middle. And this is where the 10% figure came from. So one of his findings was roughly 10% of people are exclusively heterosexual. Interestingly, though, in the key age group that he was looking at, 20 to 35-year-olds, there was a large group within that who had homosexual encounters within the past 3 years. So this is American males that he specifically looked at here who had same-sex encounters.
In fact, 11.6% of white males identified as equally heterosexual and homosexual. So they were bang in the middle of the scale.
Does it say what he actually classed as a same-sex encounter?
So anything above a 3. So on this scale, which 3 is equally heterosexual and homosexual.
I would assume that was a male engaging in anything sexual with another male. Or a female with a female.
The findings are really saying, look, some people do it lots. Some people just do it once or twice in their life. But they dip their toe in the water. Now, interestingly, since this study, there are now over 200 scales used to measure sexual orientation or describe sexual orientation.
So one wasn't enough.
One wasn't enough. And indeed, there's lots of different versions which look at biological sex, gender identity, as well as sexuality.
There's also the evolution of language around this. For example, the African-American term has been coined as down low, which refers to a subculture of men who usually identify as heterosexual but who have sex with men.
Indeed, when that term first became used, it wasn't specifically about guys having sex with guys on the sly. It was about having sex with anybody outside of a relationship. So we are going to explore all these things, and those are the facts.
Hi, this is Jane Ward, author of the book Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men, speaking from Los Angeles on the World Wide Wave.
Tonight we've stopped off in the USA where we're speaking with the author of the book Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men. It's written by Jane Ward and it delves into the subculture where it's not just okay for straight men to engage in gay sex acts, it's actually encouraged. Now, Jane herself is an interesting conundrum. Jane is an out and proud feminist lesbian. So we started by asking how a lesbian feminist came to study straight men having gay sex.
The original seed for this project was planted about 20 years ago, actually, when I was a student in college and I wasn't out yet. And I had lots of straight male friends. And a couple of them shared stories with me about physical contact that they had had with other men, naked touching, naked wrestling. And they laughed about it and talked about it as if it were funny. It was a kind of drunken stunt. It was a joke. It was a homophobic joke, but it definitely wasn't sexual. And I thought, wow, that's really remarkable, because if women engaged in that same kind, there's just no way that you would have young women in college naked wrestling and be able to get away with suggesting that that's not sexual. And so this stayed in my mind for many years. And then fast forward to the early 2000s, there was a lot of attention in the media to girl-on-girl performative kissing, so, you know, young women who would make out with each other at parties for the entertainment of male spectators. And then there was also a lot of discussion in the U.S. at least about black men on the down low, or African-American men who did not identify as gay or even bi, but who would secretly have sex with other men. And so I just thought, wow, we're really having this great public conversation about sexual fluidity, or about these encounters that straight-identified people sometimes have with homosexual touching or homosexual sex, and yet who's left out of this discussion? Straight white men.
So for those straight-identified white men, when they're experiencing this sort of sexual activity, be it anything through from kissing to full-blown sex, how do they rationalise that as being a part of the heterosexual experience?
Well, the main way is that they don't conceptualise of it as sexual at all. It will happen often in the context of hazing. It's very popular in American universities, where male students will join fraternities, these fraternal organizations, and be hazed into them. And often those initiations involve a lot of drunkenness and being kind of pushed beyond your limits to do different sorts of things you wouldn't otherwise do. And they're often quite sexualized. And so one example then that I look at are the kinds of sexual contact that young men are having in that context, where they have a clear alibi, which is, you know, I wouldn't otherwise do this, but these other older fraternity brothers are making me do it. Well, of course, they're not actually forced to do it. It's not a case of sexual assault, but there's peer pressure to do it.
Keep us on air. Become a member today. 1-300-JOY-949.
It's Roman Schlesinger from the Rainbow Pride Bratislava in Slovakia for Worldwide Wave.
And another message has come in on a global scale and some celebrity gossip. Caitlyn Jenner's interview with Ellen DeGeneres has started a conversation about being contradictory with your identity. Is it a good thing that this is out there and being discussed? I mean, if you're going to discuss it, I reckon Ellen would be a pretty good one to discuss it with.
I think all exposure is probably positive in some way.
And is it pushing boundaries, or is it, I guess, is there a risk that this is some sort of celebrity, you know, look at me type thing?
I wouldn't say it's pushing boundaries for people like us who work at Joy and people who listen to Joy, but for mainstream people who don't have any other exposure, I think it probably would be making a difference.
And especially are you calling viewers of Ellen US mainstream?
I'm definitely calling Ellen is, yeah, very mainstream now.
They're in the flyover states.
The flyover states, I think, would, yeah, I think some people in the flyover states would quite like Ellen, but I think it's mostly a coast thing.
Also, just wanted to drop in a little update. We had a little sneak peek of this last week with our guest, Busy Alimi. And if you haven't listened, if you missed last week's show, do go on. It's we've all said it's one of the best shows we've had. Fantastic person, Busy. He's a Nigerian activist. And he told us in the studio off-air, and we weren't allowed to tell you then, that he and his partner got engaged while they were out here in Australia. They have since made it public on Facebook. It says, yesterday, on our way back from holidays in Australia, Anthony, my boyfriend, and I officially announced our engagement that happened while down under, and I'm so happy to share this great news with all of you. So we're really happy too.
The reason they wanted to do it as they got on the plane, so they had 20 hours of peace and quiet.
Before they got messages and media calls and all those sorts of things.
Get to the UK and the phones are going off like frogs in a sock.
Tonight we're talking to Jane Ward, author of Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men. Jane has been talking of the role of peer pressure in supposedly making straight men participate in homosexually charged sex acts. As we don't have a university fraternity culture in Australia, we asked Jane what other types of groups might drive these homosexual acts by straight-identified men.
I also look at the United States military, in which you see very similar kinds of homosexualized rites of passage that happen in various arms of the U.S. military. One that I look closely at is the Navy's Crossing the Line ceremony, in which new sailors, as they're crossing the equator aboard ship for the first time, go through the ceremony in which other sailors will put garbage, grease, various kinds of objects in their anus and then pull them out, eat them out. I hope this is okay. I don't know how frank I can be on with these details.
You can be as frank as you like. We're fine.
Great. Okay. So, and again, in that context, it's understood to be a masculinity test. So paradoxically, you're submitting to this homosexual act as a way of showing how heteromasculine you are, that you can endure this anal penetration and stand up unbroken, not a fag, you know. And often there's a lot of homophobic talk that's happening during these encounters, so that everybody is clear that these are not sincere
acts of gay sex. These are sort of homophobic endurance tests. So these are institutional examples, but I also look at personal ads that straight men place on the internet, looking for these similar kinds of interactions with other straight men. And so across a broad range of contexts, we see straight men touching each other and understanding it as not sexual, as a kind of hyper-masculine performance, paradoxically, of homophobia.
I read one quote from a guy who was saying this is a part of the hazing ritual. By making somebody do something that they're really uncomfortable with, that grosses them out, and they get through that, then therefore I respect them more.
Yeah, in the case of the military, it's fascinating because some of the U.S. military discourse around these sorts of practices imply that military officials and participants themselves almost viewed this kind of hazing as like an inoculation against sincere homosexuality. It's like, you know, here's a context in which you are being given the opportunity to endure homosexual contact, and everyone knows that you're not really gay, and you have that experience, and you get to show that the experience has not wrecked you, it hasn't destroyed you, it hasn't weakened you, and it hasn't turned you into a fag. And part of the way I think that that's conceptualized, that if you are, you know, during times of war, if you are captured, if you become a prisoner of war, the one thing that might happen to you is that you might be raped. And so in a way, it's part of the training and toughening up the male body, making the male body impenetrable by putting it to the test of penetration.
You're mainly talking there in institutional areas, and whilst we don't have fraternities, we have had instances like this at military training colleges. How do you explain beat culture, so sex in tea rooms or cottages or beats, between men who say that they are straight? Is that different, or does that fit into the same type of idea?
Well, I think straight men have sexual contact with one another in a broad range of environments. Bathrooms, I look at, you know, back rooms of bars, in biker gangs. And so the context can be quite different, but often the logic that's used to authenticate the heterosexuality of the men involved is very similar. Just as the broader culture, just as the dominant culture, gives young women certain kinds of opportunities, straight women, for having sexual contact with other women and still retaining their straight status, mainstream culture also gives men, straight men, these opportunities, but they look different. The narratives are different. Like I said, they tend to really focus on necessity, deprivation, performative homophobia, joking, you know, grossness, abjection, all of that. So it's a very different story than the one that is acceptable for women, which is, well, I just did it to turn on my boyfriend, or I just did it, you know, to turn on those men at the club who are watching.
Your project particularly looks at white men. Is the experience of straight white men having sex together different from Afro-American or Latino cultures?
Yeah, there actually is a subculture that has emerged around non-gay identified black men having sex with other men. And I would argue that part of the reason that we see the formation of that subculture is that black men's sexuality in the U.S. historically has been under such tremendous scrutiny. There's already such a long history of constructing black men as predatory, deceitful, a public health threat, all of this. And so when men of color, black, Latino men in the U.S., engage in a sex practice that doesn't quite line up with normative expectations, they're immediately under the spotlight. And there's a lot of work being done to explain, you know, what it is about black culture, or, you know, what it is about Latino culture that could allow for this strange, discordant sex practice to occur. Whereas with white men, for the most part, the practice remains invisible. It actually slides under the radar of what's perceived as sexual. And when there is attention to it, as has been given by psychologists and sexologists throughout the 20th century, there's tremendous effort to normalize it, to explain it away, to say, well, this is not actually sexual. This is simply about male hierarchy. This is about an impulse in male culture to express dominance, and this is just one form that it takes. There's just a lot of effort to explain it as something that's not identity-based.
That's Jane Ward speaking about how sex between straight men is explained by them. It's from her book, Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men. Now, I know out there, there's got to be people who have an opinion on this. Can people have sex with a member of their own gender without being gay or bisexual? Can you maintain your straightness after having same-sex sexual encounters?
I think it boils down to this.
Wow, you've solved
the problem.
Air of anticipation.
Do you want to save that until later in the show?
I don't know why Jane bothered with a book if you've got all the answers.
Well, she's said so many things, but she's, in my mind, raised a lot of questions. Matt, you said, can people have sex with a member of their own gender without being gay or bisexual? Well, I think there's two issues going on here. One is sexuality, so that's literally what you do. The other one is identity, and that's how you, self-identify. So that's to yourself, whatever you tell yourself, and also how you publicly identify. So, I don't think we should be meddling the two because...
But the kinds of things she's talking about are intensely homoerotic acts. Intensely. Everybody knows it, but so long as you don't like it, well, that's all cool. I'm really... That makes you more masculine.
Yeah, and you've got to just endure it.
Yeah. What was it? It was you're unbroken, not a fag.
I've really got to respectfully disagree with some of the points she put forward.
Okay, go for it.
So far, she's been talking about hazing rituals, so in the military and in fraternities, and using terminology such as endurance test, a proof of heterosexuality, even going so far as to say it's part of your training for particularly in the Navy. To me, those instances and those cases sound like it's about power and abuse of power. I think it's got less to do with sex and more to do with power. I might even be as bold to draw a parallel to rape.
Well, she does actually say that. She says that it's not sexual. She says these sex acts are not sexual.
The acts are sexual. I think the motivations are not sexual.
And the role of alcohol, she talks about fraternities there, as much as we don't really have them here, but, there is all, I was drunk,
Yeah, it goes back to that old joke about what's the difference between a straight guy and a gay guy? About
a 60 pints.
You're listening to the World Wide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Visit joy.org.au now to see what's new to Joy Podcasts.
What's new?
The latest in Hollywood gossip with Peter on La Spins, the podcast exclusive to Joy 94.9 in Australia. Ginny and Adam interview Maisie Williams from Boney M on our Rise Up podcast.
Boney M?
God, that's a
flashback.
Find. Yeah. Dean Beck speaks to writer, columnist, activist, commentator and agitator Nick Hollis on Word for Word.
And our latest is up there too from Bizzy Alemi last week in Nigeria, the Nigerian activist. Great podcast.
Absolutely. One of the best guests we've ever had. And our Joyful Days podcast brings you an interview with Rick and Luke Wolfe, who feature in The Real Housewives of Melbourne. Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au/podcast. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
This is Douglas.
And this is Paula.
From Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation, keeping a watchful eye on LGBTI rights across Asia and the Pacific.
On the World Wide Wave.
We are talking about not gay, sex between straight white men tonight. A little preview. Next week, we have a Worldwide Wave special event, The Right to Life. We have our friends from Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation. You just heard their beautiful tones there. Coming into the studio, and rather than looking at a specific country, we're looking at the right to life in the LGBTI context and how it is being violated around the world in a number of different ways. So we'll be exploring everything from the death penalty for homosexuality, the inability to get treatment for HIV/AIDS due to discrimination, the inability for trans people to get gender reassignment treatment, hate crimes and high rates of suicide for LGBT youth. And we'll look at some of the activities, the initiatives that are being done worldwide to combat these problems, and some of the good news stories where countries such as Mozambique have chosen to decriminalise homosexuality. It's with Kaleidoscope Australia, who have made a submission on the right to life to the United Nations, and we'll be hearing all about that 7 p.m. next Tuesday.
We have been talking to Jane Ward, and in her book, Jane also looked at how language has been used to reinforce heterosexuality, even when it's being used on a gay dating app. So we asked Jane if these men have their own language.
I think they do have a language, but it's not a language of identity. I talk about how the language, the discourse, is heteroerotic. So the men will talk about, you know, especially in these personal apps that I'm looking at, they want to get together and just jack off together like buds. They're going to watch straight porn. They're going to drink beer. They're going to talk about having sex with women. And often, you know, they're using very misogynistic and homophobic language. They'll say, you know, no fact should respond to this personal ad. And we're going to talk about, you know, banging bitches. And we're going to talk about pussy. And so the whole, you know, language is very important in making clear that the person writing this ad wants to make sexual contact with another man in a not gay way.
So is there a line between gay and straight, or is it all gray?
Well, in the book, I argue that there should be a line between queer and straight, and that that's a useful line to draw, and that the way we should be drawing it is not based on the sex people are having. The way we should be drawing it is based on how people are understanding the sex that they have and how they're understanding their political and cultural stakes of their sexuality. What I find in my study is that there are a lot of people who are really happy with straightness, who are really invested in it, who really have a strong stake in it, who also sometimes have homosexual sex. And so whether or not a person has ever had homosexual sex is not the most useful way to distinguish between queer and straight, but certainly how we relate to the homosexual sex we have is.
The book is Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men, and the author is Jane Ward. Thanks for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Thank you for having me.
So there you go. It turns out that Jane and I do agree.
You do agree, actually. It's surprising how Jane, with all her years of academia and PhD and all that, and you agree.
It's not so much.
It's nice to see you're both on the same wavelength eventually.
You have little faith.
Now, we've had a like in on Facebook from Angel in the USA. Thanks, Angel. He likes the photo of two of our team members, Damien and Paul. It's up on our Facebook page, W3Joy. And a message in from 317. With our new PM, will there be a change in the Human Rights Commission and its direction with Gillian Triggs? Well, God, we hope so.
Can't get any worse, really.
The poor woman can't stand it anymore.
The only way is up. Now, this issue of language and apps, because I do know of I met a young guy. He was visiting here from the UK, and he was saying that he goes on to straight apps to meet other guys. He's a gay guy, but he was specifically looking for guys who were straight or straight acting, and so he went on to a straight app in order to find them. Which is fascinating in a way.
It's very fascinating because I don't quite
understand how it works.
Clearly, and he said, look, he gets more than enough. Now, he's a young guy, you know, he was right out there anyway, but yeah, I don't know.
And one of our colleagues out there when we were discussing this program was saying that straight women go on those apps to try and find gay guys.
Is the world all just, you know, have we taken a globe thing with the snow in it and a snow globe and shaken everything up? I guess it comes back to, though, what we're trying to do is put labels on people.
We shouldn't
put
be
people
applying,
in a box, yeah. And that's actually not the way the world works. Is that a fair summation?
Yeah, look, I think society has perhaps been trying to oversimplify the human condition by, you know, just going with the labels gay and straight, when we're all sexual beings, and, you know, as documented by the Kinsey scale, we're all on a spectrum somewhere, and I'd say it's rarer to be exclusively hetero or homo than anything else.
And that scale changes. That changes throughout your life. You remember back a few weeks ago and we talked about that study out of the UK, which talked about, you know, how people identify. And, you know, for somebody who was over 60, there were very, very few who identified, you know, they were either identifying as gay or straight. There were very few in the middle. But down the other end of the scale, it was like 43% of young people didn't fit those neat boxes of gay or straight. So that fluidity that might change throughout somebody's
life. That sort of falls into the idea that people will experiment when they're younger. So it wouldn't be surprising that they're actually not one or the other, but somewhere in between.
Indeed. We've been exploring the issue of fluid sexuality with Jane Ward, author of Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men. You're on World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, I am Tim.
And I'm Ben.
From Hallam, Melbourne.
And you are listening to the World Wide Wave
on Joy 94.9.
And tonight's guest has certainly opened up a few cans of worms and discussions both on mic and off mic here in the studio. So a big thank you to Jane Ward, author of Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men. You can find out more about Jane at janewardphd.com or The Queer Jane on Twitter. And the book itself has come into Hares and Hyenas here in Melbourne and also the bookshop in Sydney. So you can pop in there and get your own copy and critique the book. You'll find the details on our Facebook page, W3Joy.
And thank you to all those who have interacted with us on Facebook during the week. Greg, David, Pat Pong, Karina, Chi Khan, Australian Marriage Equality, Lismore, and a heap more.
And we'd also like to thank Gordon on the front desk, who's been busy dealing with all our messages.
Thank you, Gordon. Always does a wonderful job every week.
Now, make sure you're back with us next week for our special event on the Right for Life for LGBT people. And taking us out, a bit of Mike.
Another sexy song, I Want Your Sex, part two by George Michael.
Stick around for Around the World in 80 Gays. We'll be back next week.
For listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, Australia's best radio station.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.